Good morning. You are listening to KHEN LP 106.9 Salida. And this is City Squawk. I'm Andrew. We're back on the air after a little hiatus, I guess a couple months. And we're interviewing Mayor Chuck this morning, Mayor Chuck Rose of City of Salida. And I guess you just had a city council meeting last night, Mayor Chuck.
I guess we did.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Well, you know, that's for the citizens who pay attention to decide. But what I thought we'd start with is some fun news, and that is for those who get down by the river, you might notice we now have a lovely set of bathrooms with a water fountain, thanks to a small number of people actually making large donations for that water fountain, $3,500. And the bathrooms on the boat ramp, we have a new climbing wall adjacent to the Rotary Amphitheater. And the Whitewater Park is extended to the full boundary of Riverside Park, and that not only gives us another play hole, but it also, when water gets lower, creates a wonderful swimming hole for the kids that'll be even more slack water than what's available up above the bridge. So,
and a nice little ramp down to it too,
and
right?
A cool ramp down to it. And what first, as always, city staff needs to be really congratulated on the work they've done on this. However, the original idea of the city council was the bathrooms at the boat ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Mike Harvey who suggested we take that money and lever it with a grant to complete the entire project. And for those who've been down by the river this summer, it's created a marvelous energy. It's really, I mean, the climbing wall is just covered with kids and the occasional adult. It's healthful, safe, really fun. Maybe we'll end up with the next great rock climber coming out of Salida. Who knows? And the boaters are digging it. We also have had the Riverside Whitewater Park improvements, there will be a grand opening on the 14th of July at 4 in the afternoon, and we start out with a little climbing clinic at the climbing wall. So if anyone would like to know basics of rock climbing, that would be a great place to start. At 5:30, there is a boat parade and ribbon cutting. We start at the Coors boat ramp and cut the ribbon there. There's at 6 p.m. a bunch of thank yous at the climbing wall. And at 6:30, there's a fundraiser for the Arkansas River Trust. Donations are appreciated. There'll be beverages and light snacks. And it is that organization that has supplied a lot of the matching money from personal from donations of the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a wonderful project, and one of those projects that I think typifies what I'm trying to aim for, and that is, first, it's to the benefit of those of us who live here, and second, it enhances an amenity, an attraction, that's Riverside Park, the boat ramp, and the Whitewater Park, and it creates another attraction in the climbing wall for those who visit us. And the energy down there is so positive, it is hard to imagine someone who stumbles upon it who doesn't live in Salida would not want to come back.
Right.
The other thing that we should mention is whether this Whitewater Park all these Whitewater Park improvements are the catalyst or not, we have restaurants that are surrounding Riverside Park.
Right.
You know, I mean, Mr. Kitson with the boathouse, we now have Ferraro's, and we have the Fritz.
Yep.
The Vic, of course, has an energy all its own. Shivas and Lovell's, great little spot on the corner there.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mama D's.
I mean, that whole area now, I think in the summers we're going to see a real nice flywheel. And this is a great project, and we need to remind ourselves that it was funded largely by a GOCO grant, which is Great Outdoors Colorado, and the Arkansas River Trust, which is that organization that's going to be seeking donations to help finish paying for this project. Again, wonderful concertive effort between citizens, specifically Mike Harvey, and the city, and a bunch of other great people. So thanks to all of them.
And is it correct there were private donations to finish off the water fountain? Is that right?
Well, there was private donations to finish off a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
The water fountain initially, that's $3,500, which is a lot for a water fountain, isn't
it? Yeah, that's
pretty
expensive.
Okay, well, there's two reasons for that. If you notice, there's two heights. It's
ADA.
Criteria are met. The other is one of the sad facts of public infrastructure is it is a target for vandalism.
Graffiti.
And so basically what I call it is prison strength stuff. And that allows me to say the Riverside Park bathrooms and water fountains have, they are generally vandalized on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And that's really sad. Mm-hmm. The lack of pride, the lack of ownership that's felt, and whatever else motivates people to vandalize things. So anyway, $3,500 is a lot of money. We originally cut it because we were short $3,500 in terms of funding for this project. And I mentioned that in a meeting, and right away we had two private citizens step up for $1,000 each, and then Chaffee Citizens of Chaffee County for Sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
They, during Earth Day, sought donations, and then they themselves donated, I think it was $500 or $800, I don't recall the exact amount, which put us to $3,500, and that allowed us to have it installed by the builders of the bathrooms rather than having
it done later.
Our public works guys have to do it.
Yeah.
The other thing is public works, you may have noticed, had everything ready to go because we knew we were tight enough on that budget that we chose to have the manufacturer deliver it, which we knew was going to slide in right at FIBARC.
Yeah, it was amazing how quickly that went in.
Yeah, and if we had extra money, we could have had a common carrier flatbed bring it in 2 weeks earlier. It was ready.
Mm-hmm.
But that saved the citizens $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And Public Works, they looked like, this is probably an illusion no one's going to understand, but the Woods Brothers was the first high-speed NASCAR pit crew. And Public Works looked like that. They had everything ready to go. And that's actually...
They just dropped it in, huh?
They dropped it in. However, you may notice Sackett is higher than the bathrooms. And so that needs a pump station.
Yep.
And so it was not a simple thing to do. So Public Works did a heck of a job. And that brings us to the next topic, Andrew, and that is we've had 3 weeks of incredible events
mm-hmm.
in the city here. And so many of them are volunteer-driven.
Absolutely.
And they all deserve tons of credit. Our parade meister, Dan Sack, he's the one who organizes every single parade. I think by now he's kind of over it, at least for a while, because he's done a lot of them.
Yeah, there's Christmas, but I guess.
Yeah. Well, that'll give him a break for till Thanksgiving anyway. And then Vicky Sue V. Hill of Arkansas Valley Press, she is the chief organizer of the Air Force Academy Band.
Right.
That shows up, and that was a huge event again, third year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were expressing to me, the band members and the band director, how much they love coming to Salida and they'd like to make it a tradition. So that's pretty amazing.
That's great.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. The FIBARC board does an outstanding job.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixture of citizens and staff. We have 7 full-time people working public works. And, of course, we got a little behind on the trash, but... The guys and gals in public works, you put thousands of people in a park and then you look at the park 2-3 days later and it's clean and it's mowed
it's
green. And Lynn and the crew of public works that takes care of those parks and the rest of the guys and gals, Brenda who monitors the thing, and especially Rob who's the director, do a heck of a job, as does police and fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fire guys, one thing that's, I was a firefighter, and one thing people don't know is they like to blow things up and cause fires, and they're the ones who ran the 4th of July parade and who collected the money, and they really, it was a heck of a 3 weeks, and we have, we're going all the way through August with great events.
Oh, yeah, this weekend.
Yeah.
Brewers Rendezvous, we'll be there for that.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So it's a mixture of citizens and city employees really putting this stuff together, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. You know, in talking about Riverside Park, I remember hearing some old timers say that they just wouldn't even go to North F because that was where the, you know, the brothels used to be, all the saloons. It was the bad part of town to go to. It's really neat to see the transformation that's happening down there.
Well, I actually am amused by it.
Yeah.
What we call Sackett Street was Front Street.
Right.
The Monarch Building, I think, was it Laura Evans? She was that was not closed till 1950.
Right.
And the cribs that are going to be developed by Habitat, they were for the girls. And there's still women in town who will tell you, I was talking to Helen Levitt a couple of years ago, that they were not allowed to cross First Street.
Right.
And, you know, Sackett was the poor part of town. And now, because the river's been cleaned up, it is now the most sought-after real estate in town. And it just goes to show how things evolve.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty cool.
Well, it's interesting, too. You think about the train used to be over there, and there used to be the huge depot, I guess, as well. Mm-hmm. So,
coal dust, smoke.
Yeah, exactly. Who would want to be on that side of town? But now it's real beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, good job to everyone. It looks great.
So, should we jump into last night a little bit?
Absolutely. So, what happened last night?
A bunch of things happened last night. One thing I'm just going to mention briefly, and this reminds me of our ex-city administrator, Mike Kopp, our interim, who said, if you can't do the small things, you can't do the big things. And there's been an intense desire from some of the younger or more acrobatic BMX riders to be able to use the skateboard park. And it's actually in statute in the city that they can't. We're redoing an ordinance to allow bicycle use in that park. People need to understand is I believe it's up to a $200 fine if you ride without a helmet. What we don't need is to have the skateboard park, regardless of what you're riding, whether it's a skateboard or a bike, we don't need some kid lying in there severely head injured. So,
man, if there's one place where you'd want a helmet, I think all that concrete would be a good place.
That's a good place. And what's being investigated over this next week is the original recommendation from the Park and Rec Board was to not allow metal pegs on the BMX bikes. Doing some research, we have metal coping on the top of that. It's not an issue, but Teresa Casey, who's director of that department, is going to look into it. So we may allow all pegs in there. We'll find out next meeting. So next meeting is the hearing on this. It's the second reading. That's when we allow, that's when we seek citizen involvement. And so show up if you have a strong feeling as to whether bicycles should be in the skate park.
I mean, basically they would share the skate park then?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how? Okay.
Yes,
so
we all have to learn to get along. Yeah, I mean, what you see.
I didn't know if you had like a bicycle hour or a skate.
No, it's a good place to learn to be an adult.
Yeah.
Or at least a good adult.
For sure.
Yeah.
Got it.
And so that's a small thing. There was a series of actions around the Vandeveer. The Natural Resource Center is back on the radar. The Forest Service has let out their request for proposals. And we had to do just some what I would call legal cleanup. And that's why you'll see Vandeveer on the agenda. The other thing that was covered that is a big deal to some, it should be to all, is...
Real quick, back to the Resources Center. I mean, is that... what's the feeling on that right now with that? Because I haven't heard much about it recently.
We haven't heard much about it because we put everything in the chute and the horse was ready to jump, but we had to wait for the Forest Service to let out their request for proposals.
So they're looking for more office space? Is that right?
The Forest Service is looking for more office space. And originally when this thing first came down, and I don't know, it's there was up to 7 people who were offering to develop office space for the Forest Service. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if all 7 respond to the request for proposals. However, what the city did was create a 6320, which is a non-profit public consortium that creates some distinct advantages to the citizens of the city and also to the entities that might end up being in the Natural Resource Center. The largest amount of square footage would be by the Forest Service, and it is key that we get that for the NRC to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
However, what we're seeing is something grander than just that. We're
right.
seeing all, as many of the recreation and land use entities, and we've got commitments from the DOW, Department of Wildlife, Arkansas Headwaters Recreation Area, which is Colorado mm-hmm. State Parks, which means BLM.
Right.
And I could give you the whole alphabet soup that at least have expressed interest to a greater or lesser degree. And there's a grant out there that would allow us to put a something out front that would have, like, taxidermy displays and fauna displays, mm-hmm. and Garna could be out there saying, when people ask about, well, geez, where do we find this if we want to go
right.
rafting? And it would be a wonderful entrance to the eastern side of our entire county. That's different than what the other folks are proposing, and yet this is kind of beyond your control. So, you know, it's up to the Forest Service mm-hmm. to determine what they're seeking. So we'll just have to see what comes of that. And I should have it in my head, Andrew, as to when we will be told.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
So has the RFP deadline passed for the
No.
Okay.
No, I think it's coming up. I think there was a 30-day window, and even that has escaped me.
Okay. No problem.
Yeah. I used to be I still have a great memory. It's just really gotten short. And so that's what's going on with that.
So speaking of short memory.
Yeah.
Really. Something about medical marijuana last night, right?
Yeah, medical marijuana. This is something that fascinated me. And, you know, I'm in a unique situation as mayor. I am the only elected official who's at large.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the entire city either voted for me or against me or didn't react at all. But I don't represent a ward.
Right.
I also don't vote unless there's a setting of a tie.
Mm-hmm.
What I see my chief role as behind the scenes is trying to influence stuff, which is a fascinating place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, the council voted, I think it was 4-1, and it may have been 5-0. I can't remember. There was the state assembly
mm-hmm.
created a moratorium on the creation of any more retail outlets.
Right, for medical marijuana.
For medical marijuana starting this week, July 1st,
mm-hmm.
actually last week. The city council chose in late May to extend it on the front side to create a local moratorium for the month of June,
mm-hmm.
because the state assembly, this was really quick.
Yeah.
Really quick, and mm-hmm. it gave basically people who wanted to start one of these things 1 month up to July 1st to get all their ducks in a row.
Right.
And many municipalities that felt, for whatever reason, that they wanted to limit the number of these things, created a moratorium on that first week of June.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right under the wire, somebody who is already growing at one of their facilities, mm-hmm. a retail outlet, will put in for a conditional use permit, which goes in front of planning and zoning.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're requesting is I forget the legal term, but basically an ordinance that would retract the June moratorium.
Mm-hmm.
So their application could move forward through P&Z.
Mm-hmm.
So what the council chose to do, and I'll admit, much to my surprise,
mm-hmm.
Was to direct staff to craft that ordinance
mm-hmm.
and deliver it, I believe, to the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So the ordinance gets crafted, so these guys have something to vote on. The council mm-hmm. has something to vote on, and then they got to vote on it. So there's mm-hmm. no guarantees which way it's going to go.
Right?
Should they vote to pass the ordinance, that would allow this one operations
mm-hmm.
Conditional use application to move through the community development department
mm-hmm.
to planning and zoning.
Mm-hmm.
If planning and zoning approves it.
Right.
It doesn't come to the council because it's conditional use.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't approve it, the council is the petitioning body,
mm-hmm.
so it may come to us.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of dominoes that have to fall.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, a sliver of a quote of a full statement was put in the Mountain Mail by the reporter Audrey Gilpin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually pretty good because it's the tip of the iceberg of what I said. But the thing that made it really tough on these business owners of medicinal marijuana was the state assembly came up with these changes. Up until then, nobody really knew what the heck was going to happen because of the broad brush nature of the constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is medicinal marijuana. It's a constitutional amendment.
Right.
Just like Tabor.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest eraser in the world cannot legally clean that up.
Right.
So the state assembly this summer acted on that, and it was largely our representative, Tom Massey, who crafted that bill.
Hmm.
And the idea was to create sharper edges.
Right.
So municipalities and other governmental entities would know how to react. Well, then there was this 1 month before this moratorium went into effect. So the medicinal marijuana purveyors really scrambling because they have to interpret this legalese.
Right.
And guess what? The various governmental entities are really scrambling.
Yeah.
And believe me, there's been a focus on this. This has been a costly, in terms of legal fees, this has been a costly thing just trying to figure out what the council can do and what the city can do and can't. So anyway, that's where it's going on. Mountain Mill's article was actually quite accurate. However, the headline was misleading.
Mm-hmm.
They did not pass an ordinance that's going to allow this guy to have grow inside his building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the conditional use has nothing to do with what he's growing in there.
Mm-hmm.
If he was growing tomatoes for the sale to the public, he would still need a conditional use permit.
Right.
If he was growing tomatoes for his own use, he would not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so. What this is all about is land use. It has nothing to do specifically with medicinal marijuana. The emotional aspect of it does. There was an 80 or 81 year old gal who I wish I was as well spoken as she was, who stood up and described her years of back pain and difficulty and how this cream she's using, all of a sudden, once to 3 days, she is...
With the primary ingredient being marijuana?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, she's getting it from this purveyor. And that was really impressive. This is a woman who spent her life in this town.
No, I mean,
what's been impressive is she's willing to stand up. So
there are quite a few, I think, people out there willing to stand up who've, you know, claimed marijuana helps them with a lot of pain.
Well, there's a lot of people who claim a lot of things about stuff.
I mean, right.
You know, so, but anyway, it was powerful. You know, I have my own views on this, and it would probably be, if I wanted to be a professional politician, wise not to state them, but I'm not going to be a professional politician. 16 months, I'm out of here, but...
Well, you have a long history being an EMT.
Well, I was a paramedic in a place that had the highest rate of heroin overdose death per capita in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And not one of those was heroin on board only.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked people, what do you think the other drug on board was? And there was a few people in their urine dip who hit them all.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen very often.
Right.
You know? I mean, you had a full house. That was pretty rare. But alcohol was always on board.
Yeah.
And these people would kill themselves inadvertently with heroin.
Yeah.
And so I am less afraid of marijuana. I've never gone to a car wreck with four dead kids because they were stoned. They may have been stoned and drunk. But it is a really charged deal. And the science is not there to prove its medicinal purposes or medicinal efficacy. But I'll tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we know prohibition doesn't work,
right?
The data is sure there to tell you alcohol can be a really bad thing.
Yeah.
And yet we accept that. And I think it's something worth pointing out. We accept certain things and we don't. And logic does not enter into it.
Right.
So something else that we should talk about, Andrew, is under direction of the council, we're working on a watershed protection district ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And it only makes sense to me that any aggregate of people, a town, a city, would want the water that we're going to be drinking and their kids are going to be drinking and their friends are going to be drinking to be protected. There was a huge negative uproar roughly three years ago when this was attempted, and it was bungled by some prior staff in the sense that we had been given a particular watershed protection. This was before I was on the council, by the way, watershed protection district ordinance to just look at, and it said confidential because it came from our attorney and the guy published it. And, whew, man, it was a wild meeting. I happened to be there as a citizen.
Mm.
This particular one, the model, is steamboats. Mm-hmm. And as everyone knows, steamboat is surrounded by agriculture and ranching.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you an idea, the district shall extend over a territory occupied by the city's waterworks over a stream or source from which the water is taken 5 miles above the city's intake point on the Little Ark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that might be modified because we also take water from the Pasquale Spring.
Mm-hmm.
Could be up the main stem as well. That's something we'll have to look at. But what needs a permit? What does not need a permit is normal farming and ranching activities, which includes normal maintenance of ponds, ditches, related structures, noxious weed control, dead tree removal, construction or maintenance of wetlands and soil disturbances less than a half acre in size.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge, you can drive a bus through that.
Mm-hmm.
So what does require permitting is excavating, grading, timber harvesting, drilling, mining, discharging any pollutant into a water course, pesticides, herbicides within 100 feet of a water course, and other activities that will cause material injury, damage, or harm to city waterworks or water supply. One of the issues is some of the stuff that ends up getting, not by normal ag activity, more by manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff that ends up in the water, if you don't have a permitting process, that you discover it when your sewer plant can no longer make standards.
Mm-hmm.
And by then your sewer plant's damaged, by then you're already in violation.
Right.
And the idea behind a permitting process is you can assess this in advance, and if there's a problem, deal with it with either the person who potentially could cause it,
mm-hmm.
or by modifying how you're going to comport yourself in the plant when this stuff hits the water. This is to the benefit of everybody in the county.
Right.
And what I do ask is if people choose to come, and we encourage that they come, I've always encouraged citizen involvement, even when it's been relatively insulting and toxic, that they actually look at the document
right.
and cite the specific sections of the document that hold their concern.
Right.
Because to broad base emotional speeches are very unhelpful in how we're going to modify this thing.
Now, what does this become? I mean, this is what Steamboat uses, is that correct? Or is this
there's a lot of these watershed protection district ordinances. And
One
of the arguments against them is, man, everybody, I mean, you got Colorado Department of Health and Environment, they're doing it. You got the EPA.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, who enforces it?
Well, this is the difference.
Uh-huh.
Is firstly, why did Wall Street blow up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the regulations were in place.
Right.
All the regulations were in place to demand that these guys do it according to Hoyle.
Mm-hmm.
But the funding was not there. The government at the time, the administration at the time, for whatever reasons, and we won't go into that, chose not to fund it.
Mm-hmm.
And because they want it to be business friendly,
right.
is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've had is one of the greatest global recessions since the Great Depression.
Right.
And so my view is, if we truly want the responsibility of being in control of local concerns,
mm-hmm.
we should accept it. Because as the economy's not getting better tomorrow.
Right.
The federal government is going to have to reduce expenditures. The state is already dramatically reducing expenditures. And it may get to the point where, yeah, the paperwork goes into the CDPHE or to the EPA, but they don't have the person to come down and look at it.
Right.
Where, since it's in our best interests and we should be responsible for the water that we want to drink,
mm-hmm.
and our visitors drink, and anyone who comes into the city who drinks, and the water courses above the city.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. We need to be responsible for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I find it fascinating that the very people who say, well, we have all these other federal and state agencies, are the same ones who say, at least consistent with my conversations, are the same ones who say, keep the government's hands off of everything I want to do.
Right.
Well, you can't have it both ways, Jack.
Right.
Right. So, anyway, anybody who has comments on this, pro or con, we'd love to see them. There will be, just like the skateboard park, second hearing. It's a second hearing that we... Our second reading that we have a hearing. And so that's what's going on with that.
Neat.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be a good thing, protect our water.
Yeah, and protect it in a way that doesn't negatively affect
right.
The folks who need to make a living on all that,
absolutely.
On our 80% of the county, which is, or 75%, which is public land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another great thing that happened this week is we got information on how much PILT money this county is going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And this is payment in lieu of taxes,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I forget if it's 75. I think it's 75 or 80% of this county is public lands, which means there's no tax,
right?
And so there's money that is given to the governments because we're responsible for the people who end up there and who use our roads to get there and mm-hmm. all that stuff.
And is that a state?
No, that's from the feds.
That's a federal thing.
That's
okay.
From the feds. And the county lives in fear of losing that PILT money because it's, you know, it's, I think this year it's $1.5 million more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of their motivations for some of the taxation ideas that they've come up, increased to enhance revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not only have all of us in the county received that PILT money, but it's actually a little more than last year.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing.
Yeah, that's good news.
Yeah.
And you were also going to mention the airport.
Yeah, the airport, that's a fascinating deal. The airport, annually, the city, this year, we did a $30,000 subsidy to the airport. The county spent more than that. Since the last time the airport runway was repaired, or not repaired, but resurfaced, was 1991.
Yeah.
They've done an excellent job of maintaining it, and it's also, I'm told, I'm not an expert on this, that it's on such a great base, natural base,
mm-hmm.
that it just, it's pretty rock stable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, finally, starting in 96, we were up for getting resurfacing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't needed, so we didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in our second year of a major recession, and all of a sudden we're up for resurfacing.
14 years later.
Yeah, which is a $3.5 million project.
Can't chip seal this one, huh?
I don't think so. But the problem is, here we are on the council debating $800, $1,000, $500 expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially we will, again, I'm sure, be asked for by the county for our $30,000 subsidy,
mm-hmm.
plus $78,000 for the match,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, comes to about $108,000 next year. And the question is this a core service the government should provide?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of great things that airport does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, physicians come in and out,
yeah.
fixed-wing life, flight for life, helicopter in the summer can refuel there. There's 30 airplanes that locals own up there. And I should add, there's a CDOT grant that we're trying to get that would actually knock the match of the city and the county down to $38,000, so each entity would do $19,000. The difference between $19,000 and $108,000 to the city is huge.
Yeah.
You know, $108,000 is two and some employees
right.
in the city, which it's less than the three part-time folks who or seasonal folks who work on our parks.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you've seen we have full-time folks out there, too. It's as much as 20% of one of our road projects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a significant chunk of change.
Yeah.
And so in this recessionary time? It's a big question. And we ask this for everything, but here, of course, one of the questions we asked last night is it possible that a local contractor could fulfill the criteria for runway asphalt construction?
Mm-hmm.
Because I look at that project in a completely different light if we're lucky enough that the city matches only $19,000 and mm-hmm. the county matches only $19,000 for over $3.5 million of work. If that project could be gotten by a local contractor.
Right, the money spent back here.
And the person representing the aircraft folks up there could not tell me that. You know, we're looking at a lot of fine print, although that's something we should know within a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
the FAA has strict regulations, probably, on runway.
You would hope
materials.
So.
Yeah, that's true.
You would hope so.
True.
You know, I mean, you would hope so. So that's what's going on there. And the real big question about that is, what should the city's core services be?
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy, right?
Right.
I mean, it's water, sewer, police, fire. However, it's not so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I've said since I first became mayor is I wish there was no Poncha Springs, Salida, Buena Vista.
Right.
I wish it was a single Chaffee County government. And one of the reasons is, if you look at county government here, they provide social and health services that none mm-hmm. of the municipalities have the wherewithal
right.
nor the ability to provide.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the county's job to create amenities and attractions that, when we're honest with ourselves, we say that we are mainly a recreational draw right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the municipalities do. And you see that quite clearly with the development in Buena Vista.
Mm-hmm.
The development we spoke of earlier in Salida, the steam plant, the improvements of the pool. The pool is a bright spot right now under Teresa Casey
mm-hmm.
with, before her, Trish Buse driving the locker room improvements. Mm-hmm. Now that we have the Dola hot water, some of the programs Teresa
mm-hmm.
has instituted.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're at 50% of our subsidy for that pool.
Mm-hmm.
And also Poncha Springs with their visitor center.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are not the business of the county.
Right.
And yet it's how we create revenue
mm-hmm.
to benefit not just the visitors, but mostly the locals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a synergy between all four governmental entities. And yet the question all of us are asking right now is, what are the core services? Because as the money decreases,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to start throwing things out of the rowboat.
Sure.
And that's why the airport's worth talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, very true.
So,
and the trails up on S, I mean, is that something the city's involved with?
I should point out, the county is too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
oh, really?
Oh, sure. I mean, the county, once again, I don't remember specifics, but the county is really supportive of the Youth Conservation Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't speak specifically to the past in terms of numbers, mm-hmm. largely because with all the other numbers, they've
right,
fallen
right.
out of my head.
Yeah,
but
too many.
There is currently $15,000 pledged by the city, and this is out of Conservation Trust Fund money,
mm-hmm.
$10,000 pledged by the county, also out of their Conservation Trust Fund money, in their case, specifically for the use of the Southwest Youth Conservation Corps, to put in trail on what's called the Little Rainbow Trail, which is between
mm-hmm.
108 and 110. And that's actually incorrect. It's between Castle Gardens and 110.
Got it. Okay.
Castle Gardens is non-mechanized, which means nothing with a motor, no bicycles, only foot traffic in there now. That's a new thing the BLM's instituted. So that's kind of a moat. We can't build trail for mountain bikes for all users into that. So it's from Castle Gardens up to 110. It's roughly 5 miles of trail. It's lower than the Rainbow, so it'll be less affected by snows,
mm-hmm.
By snow and ice, and perhaps be a 10-month at least, maybe even a 12-month, depending on the year, use trail.
Mm-hmm.
And the county has, as I said, committed 10, the city 15. Tony Boone of Arrowhead Trail Construction has given us a deal And it's not, there's no contract, but, and it just depends on when he has time and all that.
Right.
To rough it in at between 30 and 40 cents on the dollar, or it's not even right. I think it's like 30% of what you would normally pay.
Nice.
Huge discount because he's a local guy. The BLM has really stepped up because originally this trail in the BLM travel management plan had to be hand-built. They said, nope, it can be built by machinery. So Tony has a mini-dozer that's a trail builder.
Nice.
He can rough in that 5 miles, and then the youth corps goes in and finishes it, which, you know, does the finish work, which is much quicker than having to build and do the finish work. And we might have, because of the county's help, the city's help, Salida Mountain Trails.
This is above the power line road, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you gain access.
Through the power line.
Well, the Skull Trail.
Yep.
Lost Trail area.
Yep.
But this is really being driven by Salida Parks and Open Space and Trails.
Mm-hmm.
Donna Rhodes is, there's a bunch of lovely ladies involved in this, but Donna is really a spokesperson.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath them as a subchapter is Salida Mountain Trails.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who have really driven this whole project from 3 years of the travel management plan mm-hmm. with the BLM to putting trails up right now. We had Volunteers of Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were just out here.
They were just up here. They did roughly, we've got almost a mile of trail, of a five-mile trail that's the north backbone that will run from 175
okay.
into Salida Mountain Trails Park above Tenderfoot right now.
So you trail to...
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was a stretch they were working on. Okay.
Yeah, and it's tough. And,
yeah.
and what we should say, our finance director, Jan Schmidt, is still on the board of directors, and she's really the one who hooked us up with VOC.
Mm-hmm.
And so she deserves a thanks for that, but... There's a lot happening with trails right now. We had the Youth Corps this spring. They rerouted Upper Sand Dunes, which is still an expert trail.
Mm-hmm.
And then our volunteers every Saturday at 9 have been doing improvements and are working on the north backbone coming from the Ute Trail side
mm-hmm.
Right now. So we have a potential, if everything goes exactly right, which nothing ever does, of having 10 miles of new trail by winter next year.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive. Largely done by volunteers, SMT and SPOT.
Yeah, and lower elevation, too, at least.
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah, so you can enjoy it much of the year, at least.
And if you're ever up there, oh, and that's another thing we're working on is the Union Pacific Railroad deal.
Mm-hmm.
They are currently, Union Pacific currently is appraising the 14 acres. Mm-hmm. Initially, we wanted an easement. You know, we didn't want to buy this thing, right?
Right.
But they said, now we'll give you an easement to get across the rail yard so you have legal access to Salida Mountain Trails in the Arkansas Hills, but you got to buy the stuff on the other side of the river that would be from Marvin Park roughly to Calco.
Okay.
And that would be a trail. That would be a parking lot, I think, for 70 to 100 cars.
Wow.
And it would be an underpass. That would be what the easement would be to get... to the trails legally.
So the easement's not over the rail yard, it's under it.
It's underneath.
Yeah, near the Calco plant.
We'll find out exactly right. where the easement goes, but that's the idea. And they have called us back, and we're working on it. And
wow.
Now we're waiting for their appraisal. And one of the things we discussed last night is where do we want to put our effort regarding grants, because as the recession increases...
Mm-hmm.
Our staff is so good at getting grants, that's not the problem. The problem
right.
is making the match.
Yeah.
And so we really need to prioritize.
Right.
And the Union Pacific is very high on our list.
Well, that's...
I mean, just think about that, how cool that would
be.
Oh,
it'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
It'd be a huge boon to the city.
Yeah, well, so it'd be to the citizens.
And to the citizens and the visitors and everything.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a draw, you know, to the tourism industry, too.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm excited about it because I, of course, live... pretty close to 175. I'm excited about that trail.
That'd be a nice way
to
work.
We need to get out there and volunteer on it. I haven't had a chance yet.
You know, just one or two days of summer, it's really fun. There's something they call a shindig once a month.
Yeah, that's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, and after working on the trail, you head on down to Salida Cafe and Absolute Bikes, and they cook you up a nice meal.
Yeah.
And it's really satisfying. You know, you build just 10 feet of trail if it's rough building in 2 or 3 hours, or you build 50. And it doesn't have to be built again, and you did it. And every time you walk or ride by there, you go, hey, I did this, man, and it's really cool. So,
and I know that, what, the VOC built something like 2,500 feet, which is, what, about a half mile or so of trail.
Yeah, yeah, and it's tough. It's tough digging up there.
Yeah,
you know? I mean,
so they didn't have a mini excavator up there.
No, that has to be hand-built in that section. And as a matter of fact, the guys from SMT and Spot couldn't jump on that, and I think there's some kind of raptor nesting area, or there's something that nests up there in the early summer or early late spring. And so, you know, that's what the BLM does with their studies. When you have your environmental impact stuff, they look for archaeological stuff, which right now is a 52 DeSoto, which makes me feel old. But
yeah.
They look for stuff of archaeological and historical importance. And above all, they look for flora and fauna that could be negatively impacted.
Yeah,
and we've got a lot of pretty cool stuff around here in that regard, and it's worth keeping it around.
Yep, definitely be a boon to the area. It'll be nice.
Yep.
Very good. So what else we got on the agenda here that we want to cover?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that's going on right now, there's two that we ought to talk about, and I think we have time to get them both in.
Mm-hmm.
The first is Salida R32J, we are pretty sure they're going to get the grant.
Right.
And I forget the exact amount. It's $13 million, $16 million, $18 million. The bottom line is it repairs the roof on the middle school once and for all.
Nice.
But above all, it builds a new high school.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, people will hear this fall, we have to make more cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But the way government funding works this way everywhere, but it's really works this way in Colorado, is there's firewalls between where the funding comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So the money is there through the BEST grant to get a new building.
Right.
At the same time that there's cuts for operations in terms of what the state is paying. So we're going to hear about further cuts in operations, and people are going to say, how can you afford to build the building? Well, the truth is we can't afford not to.
Mm-hmm.
And so Slide R32J is going to come to the school district and request from the citizens willingness to pass a bond issue to allow them to fund their portion of the grant. The building would be built where the playing fields are now, and then the existing building would be taken down. So you basically swap locations is the plan I saw. So minimal disruption. I personally believe that education is the one industry, and I hesitate to use that word, but it is the one endeavor that is, there's no way you can lose on it.
Right.
And
I mean, you're essentially, I mean, it's the future.
Well, it is.
Controlling the future. And
it's also the present.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with education is the average citizen in Salida now is here for 12 years and gone.
Right.
I believe there's two reasons for that, and I haven't been able to see the statistics at a fine enough level to say this with any certainty, which is perfect. That way I can say whatever I want, right? But we have an elderly population who moves to retire, and at a certain point they probably go to get closer to
family
and medical care that they feel they need, or they expire. You know, I mean, we all do. And the other is younger people come here, start a family, have kids, and because of the reputation of the school, they leave. And that's not a very popular thing to say. And one reason it's not popular is we have some people working really hard in the school system, doing a hell of a job. However, you can't teach modern skills, thought processes in stuff that was designed in the early 1900s. The electricity's not there, the infrastructure's not there, the plant's not there. And a simple example is this. The BEST grant has demands regarding the energy efficiency of a building you build.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we are using 250,000 BTUs per square foot to heat and cool those buildings. The BEST grant criteria is 45,000 BTUs per square foot per year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money. And that gets shifted to other uses when you're not spending it on electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be shifted to operations, to teachers' pay, to training, to extracurricular activities. So in the long run, it is taking care of these other shortfalls that we have.
Mm-hmm.
It's not direct, but it is. And for myself, my folks could not have afforded the education I got from the public school system. And when they sent all four of their kids through it, and then of the four of us in my family, only one went to a private college. The three of us all went to state schools.
Mm-hmm.
And they continued into the state schools, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them with advanced degrees, not myself, but two of them. What I feel my parents did and what I did when I accepted that education is I accepted an implied contract that I would then, when I'm making some money, pay for someone else's kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear all the time that somebody said, my kids are through school, I don't want to make that money anymore. I don't think that's someone who sees themselves as part of a community, nor understands to what degree the community supports them, because they can't afford the road that comes by their house.
Right.
They can't afford, if they had to pay what the ambulance cost when the ambulance shows up at their house, there's no way.
Right.
There's no way. The fact, what makes us a community is the fact that we all throw something in the pot, and then when somebody needs it, it's all of our money that helps, because we all don't need that service all the time.
Right.
So anyway, that's a big deal to me. I think if we could take our county and have it regain the reputation it had some time ago of one of the finest educational, one of the areas that supports education to the highest degree in the state,
mm-hmm.
The people who would come here are the people who bring their own jobs, who have the energy to create new jobs. Also, it would take our locals, instill pride in the area, and they may go away, but they will come back, and they will be an asset. And we really don't have a lot for the folks who get out of school right now to do here.
Yeah, very true.
And so education's really important. Yeah. The second thing I need to briefly talk about is the county commission is still debating as to whether they want to put the 2% countywide sales tax on the ballot. Just to repeat, and we only have a couple minutes, so this is going to be really quick, is that would not change the sales tax in the city of Salida, Buena Vista, or Poncha at all. What it would do is it would add a 2% sales tax to what the unincorporated areas pay for things that they only purchase in the unincorporated areas. So it's roughly $70 for the average citizen in the unincorporated areas of Chaffee County, and that goes to telephone, utilities, propane, stuff like that. There's a few businesses, such as in Johnson Village, a few dealerships on the other side of 50 that are in the unincorporated areas.
Mm-hmm.
They would add 2% sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
This would create roughly $1 million of revenue that would be divided, slightly over $1 million of revenue, that would be divided up and between the county, all three municipal entities, and it would allow us to maintain services at the level we have them now.
Mm-hmm.
Without it, there's going to be a problem. There's also the idea of a 0.5% increase in lieu of the 2%
mm-hmm.
countywide sales tax that would go directly to EMS and dispatch. I'm dead set against that. That would create an 8.4% sales tax in the city of Salida,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's too burdensome to the people who live here. Where the 2% rise in the unincorporated area keeps them still lower than anybody doing any business or living in the incorporated areas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a question of fairness. So those are the other things I wish we had more time to cover. But Andrew, thanks a lot for doing this again, man. This is great.
No problem. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy hearing what's going on. I'm sure everyone else, our listening audience out there, enjoys it too. That about wraps it for this edition of City Squawk. But join us in 2 weeks. We should be going at it again, and so you'll be here, right?
Yeah, and you know, we're now live. The meeting's live on Tuesday on Channel 10, if you happen to have that.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you have the loop, and you can get the DVD at the library, and you can talk to any councilman or mayor, too.
Sounds good.
All right, man.
Have a good one, everyone.
You too, Andrew.
Take care.
Renewable Energy Outfitters supports Cahen and City Squawk. Renewable Energy Outfitters provides clean energy to Chaffee and surrounding counties. REO specializes in solar electric, wind, and microhydro systems and is your local source for energy by design. For free consultations, your contact is Aaron at 970-596-3744.